Hello, I'm Mark Steiner and welcome back. As I said earlier, we're broadcasting live today from Washington, D.C. with Free Speech TV. I welcome all our listeners across the country as well as our listeners in the Baltimore, Washington area on WEAA 88.9 FM. And we're broadcasting here today because there are people from around the country here who are seeking to take back America, to build America in the way that the majority feel, as the folks who are protesting out in New York City right now on Wall Street are saying we are the 99%, but it seems 99% don't have the voice, or at least most of the press doesn't give that voice, and we are giving that voice today here, Free Speech TV and WEAA here on the Mark Steiner Show. We're joined for this hour by Ai-Jen Poo, who is director of the National Domestic Workers Alliance, Kim Miller, the National Rapid Response Coordinator for the United Steelworkers, and Melissa Ryan, new media director of the New Organizing Institute. And welcome to all of you. Good to have you with us.
Thank you for having us.
Thank you.
So I think that this for our listeners all over the country and here as well in D.C., Baltimore, my guess is I just introduced the three of you and people went, who? What? You know, and I think because we are news, our mainstream news cuts off a lot of what people are saying in the communities. So despite the work that you're doing, it's like a quiet zone, except for those who are kind of bring it up and the connections we made. So just briefly, I think that we could just tell your stories so our listeners know who we're talking with. Ai-Jen is, as I said, director of the Domestic Workers Alliance that has built a movement from New York, but in the last social forum, two social forums ago, exploded into a national movement. Talk a bit about this, because I think people even don't even realize that the notion of domestic workers have an alliance.
Absolutely. Domestic workers not only have an alliance, we have a movement that's growing around the country. We currently represent 35 local organizations of nannies, housekeepers, and caregivers for the elderly in 19 cities and 11 states around the country. And we represent the workers who do the work that makes all of their work possible. They take care of the most precious elements of their employers' lives, their homes, and their families, and yet work in isolation and in highly vulnerable conditions. And so our movement is about bringing respect and recognition to that work and really valuing that work that is caring for our homes and families, which is such an important part of the social fabric of this country.
And the movement you organized has started in New York and at the U.S. Social Forum two forums ago, morphed into something very different. When you gathered with national organizers from across the country and you created this national movement that was actually born in some ways out of that conference.
That's right. We formed at the U.S. Social Forum in 2007 in Atlanta, and it was really symbolic that we formed at that moment in Atlanta. Atlanta is a really a site of historic significance for domestic workers. It's where the first strike of washerwomen took place in the 1830s. And it was that energy, that history that we sought to carry forward, forming the alliance and growing from 13 affiliate members to now 35. And we had a major victory last year in passing the very first Domestic Worker Bill of Rights in the state of New York. And we're now working towards passing similar legislation in the state of California, the California Domestic Worker Bill of Rights.
We'll come back then in the course of the conversation. And Kim Miller, the National Rapid Response Coordinator for the U.S. Steelworkers, and I jokingly said to Kim before that when I heard her title, National Rapid Response Coordinator, I had this kind of, you know, comic book vision of there's a strike going on and we've got to get the rapid response team in place. And they come down in their suits and capes and save the day for the workers. But what is...
Well, Mark, in reality, that's exactly what we tried. I'll start with the big picture of the United Steelworkers. So we're 1.2 million members, active and retired members strong, primarily in the United States and Canada. Though we also have alliances around the globe. In particular, our partnership with Unite in the United Kingdom and ever-growing bonds around the globe, you know, as we face global worker struggles. So within that context, we are a labor union, and we represent workers at the bargaining table, trying to ensure, as a predominantly manufacturing union, that people make it home safely from their jobs, that people get a decent stake in their working lives. As part of that process, we are a union that's very engaged in the legislative process, recognizing how much of government activity has a direct relationship to what we do each and every day. So back in 1995, or roughly the mid-90s, it's slightly debated, we launched a pilot program called Rapid Response. And it's basically our union's grassroots legislative action network, where we track what's going on in Washington, or particularly in the case of this past year, track what's going on at the state level legislatively. And we make sure our members know about it. And when it's appropriate, when it's something that's a workplace issue that that we can all rally around and get involved and we take action. So, you know, we do sort of swoop in there sometimes. Sometimes it's a rally. A lot of times it's making phone calls. We've got a big national action tomorrow trying to block some of the pending free trade agreements that are moving their way through Congress. So yeah, we do sometimes do just
swoop in. And Melissa Ryan, new media director of the New Organizing Institute, you were also a key figure in media work and organizing during when the workers in Madison tried to stop the governor from slashing the unions to death. So talk a bit about the New Organizing Institute.
Well, at the New Organizing Institute, we train political organizers in engagement organizing, and by new media and online organizing, what I do is help people use great tools and technology to organize and speak out online. One thing that came from my work in Madison, where I helped the National Table of Labor Unions and Wisconsin Table organize online, is this idea that we are all media. The people in the crowds had this very strong sense of no one's going to tell our story, so we have to tell it for us. I've been working with online communities since the early days of what we would call the Netroots. I've never seen so many people engage online as I have in Madison. Every third person had their cell phone out, and they were taking pictures, and they were tweeting, and they were posting what they were doing on Facebook. And I think part of the reason they were doing that is because they had this real sense of, we have to tell our story, because the traditional media institutions aren't going to do it for us, and if they do it, they aren't going to do it right. So a lot of my work involves helping people tell their stories and organize using tools.
Let me kind of raise what I think is a sticky issue for a lot of people on the progressive end of the world trying to figure out where the movement's going and where things are headed in this country. And that has to do, here we are in Washington, D.C.
Mm-hmm.
As we used to say, in the belly of the beast. we're in Washington at a conference that in some ways feels very D.C., feels very inside the Beltway. Just,
yeah.
You know, you're here, it has that feeling. So, but most people in America don't relate to that at all and are more and more having a difficult time relating to either one of the two major parties.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So I'm curious what you think, and a lot of people here are progressive Democratic activists. Many progressive Democratic congressmen are here as part mm-hmm. of this conference. So, but there's a very tough divide going on right now.
Yeah.
I'm curious, as organizers, as people who are outside of the part of the mainstream, especially domestic workers and organizers, typically outside the mainstream, I think unions thought they were inside the mainstream, but are no longer don't quite in there at the moment, I think. So tell me, what do you think that fits for us? Where are we? You've said, I've seen you say before, Arjen, that, you know, we have to get to the left of the Democratic Party. We have to push somewhere from the outside. So let's talk a bit about where we are on the spectrum and what our role is vis-a-vis the power center we're in.
I think that we have a really unique opportunity right now to build a powerful and vibrant movement in communities around the country around values, not party politics, but around values, around the American dream, around the things that, I mean, look, the country is at a crossroads. And in some ways, a good friend of mine in the labor movement in New York said we're sort of standing at the crossroads of hope and disaster. And to me, it's also a question of, we can go one of two directions. We can continue down the path of you're on your own, or we can go down a path of we're in it together. And I think we have enough consensus out there in the community that there's something really wrong with the direction that this country is headed in, and that our values and the very social fabric of everything that we care about is under attack. And so we have this moment and this opportunity to really unite communities, workers across sectors, across generations, around values like the notion that everyone should have a dignified job, everyone should have a dignified quality of life, everyone should have access to education. I mean, these are things that really are common threads through all of our communities and across class experiences. And so I think that movement around values that's about what connects us is what we need to be building in this moment.
Picking up on that, so how does that, how do you all think that actually, what form does that take in the work that you're doing?
Well, I can speak to the steelworkers and our experience. And, you know, we're an organization that's not based in D.C. We're based in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, with offices around the country. And yes, while we do have a presence in Washington, D.C., we've always put a very high value on making sure that our members are educated on the issues and making sure that people across the country know what's happening here in Washington and then in turn be able to impact what's happening in Washington. So, I think that there's real value in forums like this to bring people together. And as I've been sitting here at the conference, there's a lot of people from all over the country who are speaking out and who are sharing their experiences. And I think these opportunities for us to come together are fantastic. But I think the real work has to happen on the ground and in the field. You know, and that's where we change things.
And go ahead.
Well, I mean, I think people are talking back, and they're talking back in a big way. They're talking back by voting. They're talking back online. They're talking back with these groundswell protests that you're seeing in places like Madison, Florida, Ohio, these Occupy Wall Street. I think what our challenge is as progressive institutions is how to work within that and find ways to come together in a way that doesn't breed more apathy, because part of what they're talking about is a mistrust of institutions.
When what is faced at the moment, and I don't mean to sound negative, just trying to be realistic about what we face.
Yeah.
What we face in the moment, and I think, again, something that I've read that have come out of the Steelworkers Union, what I've read that you have said, Ajahn, that we are facing a movement that is fueled by billions of dollars.
Yeah.
That in many ways masquerades itself as a populist people's movement.
Mm-hmm.
And has the power of a major network behind it and gets it out there and gets the attention of the media. So in the face of that, that reality doesn't mean that you roll over and die and that we're going to lose, but it means that that's the reality of what's out there.
Yeah.
So how in what seems are almost disparate organizations going to face that kind of united dollar that is confronting them? You know, I mean, the work you do with domestic workers and organized around the country, or steel workers, and new media, but it all seems so disparate, so separate, so disconnected. Am I wrong about that? Am I missing something? Is there something you think is missing that needs to be added to where we have to go?
Well, you know, if I
go
could
ahead,
just
please.
Jump in there first.
I
think that we have to keep looking all the time at ways that we can connect, because our struggles are the same. The overarching themes of everything that we're approaching right now are all the same. And we have to keep looking for allies wherever we can find them. And it's just an example within the steelworkers. A few years back, we partnered with the Sierra Club to form an organization called the Blue-Green Alliance. And a lot of the times, it'd be the same people on the opposite side of the issue from us trying to divide us and say that, you know, you can't have jobs if you have environmental protections and vice versa. And we realize that there's a lot of places that we can come together and we can fight these fights together and be stronger together. And so I think if we keep looking for opportunities like that to keep strengthening and keep mobilizing and keep educating, it's all only going to help the picture improve.
The word I would use is decentralized.
Which is where we are now.
Yeah, but I don't think decentralized and dispirited are the same thing. I think you're seeing the beginnings of the movement. I think you're seeing leaders who are starting to take part in these groundswells and these uprisings. I think they're going to be emerging and they're going to get better with every protest. So I'm not discouraged. I'm actually heartened by what I'm seeing. And again, just decentralized, dispirited, not the same thing.
Absolutely.
I would add that this conference is about taking back the American dream, and there's a really powerful theme there that actually cuts across all of the different campaigns and issues and communities that are here at this conference, but at pretty much every progressive conference out there, there's a resonance with this theme of the American dream, and I think that what this theme offers us is an umbrella, a way to coordinate, a way to connect our different issues around a set of values that make it easy for people out there in the country to understand who we are and what we're about, right? And I think that that's been missing in the past, and so that's what's so powerful about this conference and about that message of taking back the American dream. And as a part of that, what the Domestic Worker Alliance is doing is we've launched this campaign called Caring Across Generations, which is about creating new jobs that will take care of our nation's growing aging population. So we're trying to create 2 million new jobs in home care, but we're doing it in such a way that's bringing together seniors who are going to need that care, people with disabilities who are going to need that care, families of people who are worried about who's going to take care of their loved ones, and care workers and their families. So trying to build a movement around care that's part of and feeding into the broader American Dream movement. So I think you're seeing people taking initiative, building campaigns that are uniting Blue-Green Alliance, Caring Across Generations, the new Bottom Line campaign around corporate accountability are starting to align organizations that do similar work around similar themes, and then all of us can start to cohere and coordinate around this theme of taking back the American dream.
I mean, if you just took the work that, and I think it's important to get some stories out here, is I think that you take the work the three of you are involved in, and just for a moment think about the people and their struggles and what they are doing to change things and how to hold on to the power. I think it's important for our listeners to hear that and our viewers to hear that and see that, to hear about domestic workers and the steel workers and alliances and what people are doing in Madison Crossing, student and community and labor lines to come together, because we don't hear that story.
Yeah.
So if you would, maybe let me just throw a ball out there and see what happens. if you all could kind of relate something that you hear, a story that resonates with you from the world you're in, that says something about power and hope, that says something about the power of people on the ground and what they can do and what they are doing from your worlds.
One example I can think of. I'm sorry.
No, sorry.
One example I can think of immediately from the first days of the protests in Madison. Of course, you know, it wasn't just unions coming out, turning out people. It was students. It was teachers. It was public workers. It was their neighbors. Everyone either was a public worker or knew a public worker. But one of the most heartening things that I saw the first week of protest was a family, and the youngest child ran into their teacher. And she was so excited to see her teacher, and she said, "Oh, we came here to fight for you." And I just, that moment always sticks with me of, you know, everybody was in this together, and knowing that these cuts were going to affect everyone. They were going to affect the teacher, they were going to affect the family, they were going to affect a neighborhood and a community.
You know, and just along those lines, I have to play off that a little bit, like the situation in Ohio, where the attacks are just as swift, particularly against collective bargaining rights. You know, using social media again, you know, I look at my Facebook page, and there are a number of teachers that had previously been completely apolitical and had never saw political posting from them. Then all of a sudden, the fight over SB 5 in Ohio brews up, and then everybody starts to get engaged. And so, you know, I certainly see it from my union experience, but just at a personal level as well. And I'll tell you from the vantage point of where I sit within the United Steelworkers, I'm pretty blessed because I get to see the stories of activism on the ground all the time. And you know, right now what's very much on my mind are some free trade agreements that you know, we feel are very problematic for U.S. workers, but not just U.S. workers around the globe.
That's right.
Whether you're in South Korea, whether you're in Colombia, whether you're in Panama, and you know, with just under a week and a half, you know, we put the call out, and we have dozens of members who are making the trip into D.C. tomorrow just to be here and be present and sort of speak out against those things. And, you know, at their own personal sacrifice, some of them will be in a van for literally 10 to 12 hours tomorrow just to be able to make that trip here. And they've kind of dropped everything to be able to do it. So those are the things that keep me inspired and keep me going all the time.
We're not talking about full-time actors. We're talking about human beings who
work
for a living
every
day.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
Right. Hi, Jen.
Recently, on August 20th in San Francisco, over 500 seniors and people with disabilities and immigrant domestic workers and home care workers and moms all came together at Mission High School to share their stories and talk about the crisis that we're all facing and how we're going to work together to both protect what we have in terms of Medicaid, Medicare, Social Security, these basic safety net, the fabric of our safety net that's currently under attack, but also to create what we need in a way that recognizes everyone's dignity, the dignity of workers and the dignity of people who are aging. And the table discussions were so rich that people exchanged phone numbers and talked about coming over and forming emergency care support teams for each other and how they're going to continue to build these relationships in the community that aren't just about passing policy, but how we're going to start to take care of each other at the community level. So it was very inspiring. And there's going to be 18 more of those care congresses in cities around the country next year.
Really? So how do you think that essentially the group sitting here, because you have you representing a traditional union, United mm-hmm. Steelworkers. There's a big union in my hometown, in Baltimore. And what is tantamount to a new union, mm-hmm. right?
Yes.
Outside that fold.
That's right.
Domestic workers. And someone who has been working on the lines between, in a union town, to save the power of unions in Wisconsin in drawing communities together. So I wonder what lessons, these three have never met before, but your work has met before, but you've never met before, right?
It's true.
So I wonder how you see what the transformation taking place with unions. Because people always talk about unions being dispirited, unions being the past. Unions have no weight, no power, lost so many members. So talk about how the intertwining of your worlds, what does it speak to in terms of unions in the future, and how do you think it's, give us a little vision about what you think is happening with that.
Well, you know,
the union speaks first, the steelworkers speak first.
Absolutely.
I was just going to comment, you know, probably, you know, 9 months ago, the terms collective bargaining was something that no one even really understood what that meant.
Yeah.
But now, because of the things that have happened in Wisconsin and because of the things, you know, primarily at the state level that have happened, that's sort of, you know, unions who have suffered from, we have suffered from a really bad PR campaign, you know, and that classic power struggle for years. Kind of help some people see us in a new light and kind of take a second look. And I think that is a very positive thing because we know what we're about, but communicating that message with everyone else is a challenge too. And then I'm also, I should mention, you know, like I know within my union and then across the AFL-CIO, the next up, young workers. They just met in Minneapolis, and I think there were hundreds of them there, all talking about ways to sort of, you know, broaden the labor movement. How do we make a place for younger people? How do we address some of those issues as we evolve and we change? And I think those are all sort of promising things in terms of how we connect as one another.
So a lot of the work that I do is training labor unions and members in new organizing and new media organizing. And I see, and I'm an optimist, so take this with a grain of salt, but I see tremendous opportunity in for us to reshape the dialogue and how we talk about labor in this country and how we talk about workers and how we talk about that the labor fight is a fight for all working people. And to stop seeing unions as just institutions, to say, you know, as just like any other political institution, and start seeing unions as the advocate for working families across the board.
Mm-hmm. I mean, you are outside that fold. You're not part of the AFL-CIO. You're not part of the other unions. You are coming in from the outside, mm-hmm. completely from the outside. Mm-hmm.
And I'll be honest, what I see is that the unions and the labor movement have really been the last line of defense against corporate greed in this moment. And I think that for the progressive movement, labor has been the resources and the infrastructure and the power behind so many of the issues that we care about, everything from climate to healthcare. And I know that there's a lot of talk about labor being in decline, but I can tell you from what I see at the local level, I mean, what happened in Wisconsin was an incredible indication of how much people are willing to stand up for their basic dignity and their basic rights as workers. And I see that on a daily basis in communities. I see local union organizing drives. I see the rank and file members coming out to support domestic workers who are not part of the union. I see a lot of very inspiring drive to build a labor movement that matters, that's powerful, that speaks to the needs of the 21st century workforce.
You know, I think we're going to take a short break here in a minute and come right back, but I what would be interesting to explore and hear more about is how we go up against and how you combat, like let's say today's poll, Washington Post poll. Did you see the poll today?
No.
Right. Not that it's really important, because polls can mean anything. But today's poll came out saying that most people think Barack Obama will lose the election and a Republican will win. And we can talk about Barack Obama and progressives a little bit during the course of the next half hour as well. But that's what people see. That's the news that is in the headlines. That's the news that runs across the ticker on your TV. That's what you see when you open up what's left of your daily newspaper. Or even when you go online to look. So that's public perception. And the question is, with the new media, with the organizing on the ground, how do we address that? How do we address this popular culture mythology that is so dominant and takes on the role of truth? And we'll come back with that in just a second. We're broadcasting today from the Take Back America Dream Conference in Washington, D.C. We have with us on this panel, Free Speech Television and for WEAA 80.9 FM, the voice of the community, Ai-Jen Hu, who is director of the National Domestic Workers Alliance, Kim Miller, National Rapid Response Coordinator, United Steelworkers, and Melissa Ryan, new media director of the New Organizing Institute. I'm Mark Steiner. We'll be right back. Don't go away. Hello, I'm Mark Steiner, and welcome back to the Mark Steiner Show. We are broadcasting here today from the Take Back the American Dream Conference in Washington, D.C. People from across the country who believe we can have a better America are gathered here today. We're broadcasting here for Free Speech TV and for WEAA 80.9 FM, the voice of the community, back in Baltimore, in Washington. And we our first panel here in our conversations today for Free Speech TV and WEAA. Is on the future of America and labor, and they all represent different aspects of labor. Ai-Jen Hu is director of the National Domestic Workers Alliance. Kim Miller is National Rapid Response Coordinator of the United Steelworkers. And Melissa Ryan is the new media director of the New Organizing Institute. And when we left, we had a very easy question to wrestle with.
I'm not volunteering to go first.
Why not? You're the rapid response team.
Good point.
But if you look at what they throw at us as truth, as people, and so we consume that, becomes part of the reality that we see all the time. But that reality has to be dealt with, addressed.
Yeah.
So how do we do that? I mean, what do you all do that? How do you approach it when you're doing your work? You see those kind of headlines. You see people saying, "Oh, I've lost hope. Barack Obama's terrible," or whatever people are moaning about at the moment. But you know, it's the power that has to be fueled. And to face that, how do you do it? How do the three of you do it?
Well, the first thing I encourage any organization or candidate who's trying to figure that out to do is listen. One great thing, and I work on the internet. The internet talks back. It will tell you loud and clear what people are feeling and thinking. I think part of the reason that there is so much anger at things that are happening in our country with the president and institutions, both conservative and liberal, is because people feel they're not being listened to and they feel like systems are not working for them right now. And so I think the first step is to listen and to tap in and acknowledge that anger.
And, you know, and I think one of the things that we need to do for people is help them cut through the clutter and connect the dots a bit on the big picture things that are happening. Because I think when people start to see sort of what's happened in our country in the last, you know, 30, 40 years and start to see the shift in power and what's happened over that time, then it sort of is like a light bulb and you kind of can view the world in a slightly different perspective. So what we do internally, and that's part of the reason that our network of Rapid Response was created, was to get that type of information out, not necessarily the information that's going to be covered on the news or that you're going to see on the front page of a Washington Post article, but the things that really mattered to people, you know, whether it's a workplace safety issue or whether it's something that has to do with retirement, things that really matter to people that they can connect on, not necessarily the horse race or the this or the that, and try and get them educated on what's going on. And that's, you know, and I think that's one way to approach the issues that are out there with all the sort of information that goes on, is just try to get to people through different channels.
I would agree. I definitely believe in good old-fashioned organizing, and I believe in talking to people and bringing people together and having people talk to each other. And I think that the power of understanding that you're not alone, and that it, together we're stronger. I mean, these very simple themes that have always been true, I think, are what we've always relied upon, and I think it's time for organizing and for movement building and for more of us to do it together.
Mm-hmm. Now, I know when I asked this, the normal response would be both, but I'll ask it anyway. Are elections important? Or is organizing important? What's the priority? I mean, people look at elections and they go, well, we elected these people. They go to Congress, mm-hmm. they go here. So what's changed? I mean, in my hometown of Baltimore, I think 20% of the people came out to vote in the last election. 20%.
Yeah.
In a poor city. Mm-hmm. 25% of the people in our city live in the official poverty standard, which means I double that.
Mm-hmm.
Say the half the people of Baltimore live in poverty.
Right. Mm-hmm.
If you're making $34,000 or less a year, you're living on the edge or in the midst of poverty, trying to see if you can survive.
Absolutely.
So folks don't vote. Why do I vote? I vote. Does anything change?
Yeah.
Am I still going to keep my house? My school's going to get better? Why am I, you know, so is voting at this point important or something else important? I'm curious how you all wrestle with that, because you do very different things. Hi, Jen.
I think organizing is very important, and I think that elections in the context of organizing and movement building are very important. They're important moments to both influence the public debate and consciousness and be influenced by it. I think that they're opportunities to put forward your values, your issues, the community's needs and interests and priorities, and it's an opportunity for leadership development, for building, for talking to thousands more people than you usually talk to. So there's lots of opportunities, but at the end of the day, I think we have to think about this as a long-term effort,
mm-hmm.
right?
Mm-hmm.
And an effort that continues in communities. Building power is a long-term process that has to happen every day, including the day after elections and beyond. So to just have it be within a trajectory of a long-term vision for justice and equality in this country, and then seeing elections as moments in that trajectory.
That's a key word. I want to think about that from the last thing you just said. Elections are moments. Moments. And a lot of things affect that moment. And then in unions, I mean, like unions went all out in the last couple of elections to put progressive Congress people in, put progressive folks in. Got to Congress in the last few years and got stonewalled. Everything the union said we wanted while we're fighting this, stonewalled.
Elections aren't enough. They're part of a broader strategy. So I think part of the problem is we get someone elected, or we get a group of, you know, we get the majority, and they're like, oh, good, our job is done. But you have to keep working with those members that you've elected, and when they don't do what you elected them to do, you have to find ways to hold them accountable.
Do.
And, you know, I just like to go back to what Jen said, and, you know, moments, they are moments. Elections are moments, but they can be incredibly powerful moments, too, as we've seen with just how a little shift can mean the difference between collective bargaining and then not being able to have that ability as a worker to you know, advocate on your own behalf in your workplace. So those moments can be exceptionally critical. What I will say is that, yes, well, I think there is this perception that labor didn't get a lot along the way. I can point to some very specific things that have made very tangible benefits for steelworker members in manufacturing that do not get the big headlines, that have mattered a lot over the last few years, in particular with a manufacturing union. I mean, you know, we've just been slammed for years and years with the decline in manufacturing in the United States and sort of the selling out of manufacturing in the United States. And one thing that the Obama administration has done is they've really taken a very serious tone with trade law enforcement. And while that may not mean a lot to the average person, that means, you know, a woman being able to keep her job and being able to support her kids. That means a community being able to continue to exist because a facility can stay in business. You know, when there's very real and tangible effects of that. So, yes, while maybe we didn't get the labor law reform that we wanted, you know, there are still a lot of pieces, and the alternatives could have been so much worse. But also, I'd like to go back to your original question and talk about I think we need to always keep educating and keep mobilizing, because if somebody goes into the ballot box, you know, in an important election, but has no point of reference about who the candidates are, right, or what the substance is there behind them or what to expect, that's when we have problems. So you need to make sure those year-round pushes and the continual education and the continual work are happening so that people are more well-educated when they go into the ballot box to really understand how candidates impact their bottom line and their interest.
So, you know, I was, one of the things I was really thinking about as you all were coming in here tonight, and also I mentioned during the break for a second, is that there's also something, there's another shift happening, and I think you represent that shift. I mean, it's a shift that's younger. All of you pretty young. I mean, under 40, most people are young to me, but under 40, and as well as being women, and the power and role that women are playing in these new movements. I think it's a quick story. Years ago, when I was organizing Mississippi, Alabama, there was a pulp workers union, and it was half black, half white, and the Alabama, Mississippi, and the governments and the union and the companies crushing in every time they came up. Split the workers, usually along racial lines.
Yeah.
The workers only won when the women stood up and said enough is enough. And the women marched in the capitals and took over. And then the union actually won, and they elected officials black, white, and they started building their own movement among the pulp workers. And so I always think about that in terms of the power of women. But then it was women who were like in a secondary position saying, no, we have to have a voice. But we're in a different place now, where women are actually in a primary, have a primary voice. I'm curious what you think, how that plays in where we are as a movement, where we are as a nation, what it represents, and how that changes maybe some of the perspective and dialogue that we have and the push we have and how we do it.
Well, I'll just mention that I think any successful movement has to represent the people you're trying to move. So I think the more diversity, whether it's gender, whether it's racial, whether, you know, whatever the background is, the more diversity we can bring to the table, the stronger we all are. So, you know, I applaud my union for making steps to try and keep diversifying amongst our ranks and our leadership. But I think, you know, I think it's something we have to be cognizant of, and I do. I think it brings more strength to the table.
I think these, you know, particularly when you look at the war against public workers in several of these states, I mean, we're talking about a workforce that is made up largely of women. We're talking about teachers, we're talking about nurses, we're talking about public workers. So, you know, the workforce has changed and evolved. So I think it makes sense that the three of us are here working on these issues.
Mm-hmm. I always say that that when you see the world through the eyes of women, mm-hmm. you actually just see the world a lot more accurately. And you also see opportunities, strategic opportunities, that you wouldn't necessarily see otherwise. And I think with the Caring Across Generations campaign and looking at the world through the eyes of domestic workers who are sort of sitting at the nexus of a huge demographic shift in this country where we're both communities of color are growing and we're also living longer and our nation is aging. So the need for care is going to grow, and who's going to bear that burden is women, right? Family caregivers, women who are responsible for bottom line, the care needs of their families, domestic workers. And so you start to see a different texture to what's happening in this country and also different strategic opportunities to collaborate. And so I think that it's important to support women's leadership for that reason. And I'm really excited about women like Sarita Gupta, Director of Jobs with Justice, Phaedra from Green for All. There's some really wonderful women of color leaders that are coming up that I think are going to change the world.
Well, it leads you to other thoughts. And one has to do with race and color in America. And the other has to do with maybe new forms of how this movement grows. The first, it's clear that, you know, when you look at what's going on Occupy New York, there's mostly young white students, young white people came in. It's changing when you go to New York. You see that it's communities of color coming in larger numbers, and many unemployed people in those coming into the streets. And so, but we traditionally have a world that is, even in movements, has been just divided, white and black, mm-hmm. white and brown, separated, not coming together. So, but do you think we're entering a new phase? Do you think we're entering a new place? Is that we're about to enter an America where there will be no majority mm-hmm. in terms of ethnicity.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
We're entering a new world. And so, how do you see that reflected in where we are now, and what you're doing, and the work you're doing, and how it builds? Because it's a tough one. We do see this split all the time. And racism is real, very real. Whoever likes to, I know it's, Kim, why don't you start, since you said, you said,
Well, you know, I think, you know, part of the first step of that is to be cognizant of, you know, of differences and struggles and, you know, and conflicts over the years and just trying to figure mm-hmm. out where we've come from and where we can go together. And I know it's a pretty general answer, but you know, like within the steel workers, and I'm thinking still about gender a bit, you know, we have a program called Women of Steel that's designed to bring women together, empower them, get them to understand the union and encourage them to run for office and take on, you know, greater responsibility in the union. So I think we have a bit of an obligation to kind of push that along. You know, and where there's not diversity, to help make diversity and help push that along.
Jen?
Well, to bring it back to the theme of the conference, I really think that the notion of the American dream is something that's very unifying across mm-hmm. race mm-hmm. and generation. And I think it's really meaningful, particularly for communities of color who see this country, part of the dream as continuing to move towards a more just and more equal society, and a society where there's real equity, right, across race and class and gender and all the many differences. And I think that theme can be powerfully unifying in a time when we really need unifying themes, because I think that where we're headed is certainly towards more polarity, mm-hmm. right? And more polarizing. And so I think there are very real demographic shifts happening. There are real fears. There's a real legacy of history that's deeply embedded, of racism that's deeply embedded in our culture. And I think there are real opportunities to try to connect our different struggles and our experiences in ways that are about creating a more equal society for everybody, a more dignified future, more economic opportunity for everybody.
Listen,
I think one of the stark, the biggest, most stark differences between the right and the left right now is that the left is more decentralized. They are a larger, broader coalition with a lot more groups of people coming together and saying, hey, we're facing a lot of problems right now that are affecting all of us across the board. I see the right doing the exact opposite of that and sort of hunkering down and, you know, we've got to protect ours. And I think long term, ours is the strategy that's going to win because we're going to have more people.
Every time I hear somebody talk about the real Americans.
That's code.
You know? And it's code, right.
Yeah.
Real Americans is the real Americans that blew out of the Confederacy and the real Americans that we had slaves once. It was a good place. A good country. And I hate to say that. People get angry when I say that, but a lot of it, not that people believe that, but there's a sentiment, there's a sense that you're connected to something in the past and you're afraid to lose it.
Yeah.
And those roots are deep.
Mm-hmm.
But I think these new roots that you all represent are a different set of roots that are growing.
Mm-hmm.
And I was wondering, as you talked, Ajahn, earlier, when you talked about the women who came together in San Francisco,
mm-hmm.
Who take care of the elderly and the elderly themselves. And I started thinking, to me it was almost an example of how we have to begin to develop new ways of thinking.
That's right.
Mm-hmm. In other words, when people talk about Medicare
mm-hmm.
being this burdensome bureaucracy, weighed down, part of the way it weighs it down, it seems to me, is the institutions where we put our elderly and the cost of all of that.
Mm-hmm.
And how different it would be if elderly were able to stay in their homes
mm-hmm.
or stay in the homes of their families, and people that you represent
mm-hmm.
are the caregivers who actually create an entirely different way of looking at how we take care of ourselves when we get older.
That's right, absolutely. And it's also a question of values and priorities, right? So we did a calculation, our economists have been working to try to understand what it would cost to make sure that every single one of our elders in this country had access to the care that they needed, and that every worker responsible for that care could receive a living wage and benefits.
Mm-hmm.
And it comes to about 5% of the defense budget. 5% of the defense budget to make sure that every single aging person in this country and person with disabilities could have the care that they needed and the workers could have dignified jobs. Now that to me feels like a national priority, right? And so part of it is how do we shift our national priorities in such a way? And I don't know a single family that's not struggling with this question of who's going to take care of grandma or who's going to, right? If this is a problem that every family is dealing with in isolation, why isn't it a national priority, right? So part of it is about changing the narrative and talking about what we care about in such a way and not being afraid to demand what we need for our communities.
And what you described, it seems to me, and just I'll can jump into this, I mean, that what you're describing to me is kind of a cry that can touch a lot of people.
That's right.
That makes some sense. You talk about, when we talk about the Medicare budget being going down the drain, we can't afford it, but if there's another way for us to think about keeping families whole and keeping America whole and taking care of people and putting people to work at the same time, that can change the conversation.
That's right.
You know, those are the kinds of things I'm talking about, the kind of new, powerful ideas and realities that you all, we all, have to get out there.
There's great power in stories.
Yeah.
There's great empathy in stories. And if we talk about the change that we're trying to see in terms of this is how this will affect my grandmother, this is how it will affect your
right.
neighbor, we're going to have a much easier time than if we're constantly trying to tell people what they should be thinking, feeling, or doing.
So let's talk about how we do that. I mean, there's two ways to think about it.
Yeah.
One is what you're describing, Ajahn, is organizing on the ground, domestic workers, the elderly families, and building a different kind of movement
mm-hmm.
around that.
Mm-hmm.
And the whole domestic workers' bill of rights and what that engenders. And taking, quote unquote, the maids out of the back room and into the front of the house. And so you've got that, but then you also got the questions you mentioned a moment ago, Melissa, which is the stories.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm curious, when you think of these new ways of thinking about this, how do we start thinking about how we bring both the idea of the media and the stories and the organizing on the ground together as kind of a shift in consciousness? can push things around in a different way. How would you all do that? What do you think about how that's done?
Well, I go back to what I said at the beginning of the conversation in this, we are all media.
And we are all
the
media.
More people, yes.
Yes, we are.
The internet talks back, and it talks back loudly. I can think of, again, we've talked about Wisconsin, Ohio. I see this going on at Occupy Wall Street, where the institutions weren't paying attention, so people kept talking and they kept telling their stories until that rumble became too loud to ignore. So I think as we work within our communities, as we work within our organizations, we always have to look at how can we tell as many stories as possible and how can we make it as personal as possible. I think about, I have, you know, the parent test. If I go to my mother with a 10-point plan about why healthcare is important, she's going to tune out very quickly.
But amen. That's right.
If I talk to her that healthcare is important because it affects someone she knows, you know, that's going to have a lot more impact.
Right.
I think you hit the nail on the head. I think the more personalization that we can make for the politics that we're experiencing right now will just, you know, serves all the better in the long run. You know, so as many stories, as many people as we can get to tell their stories in as many different types of forums, they're the best advocates, you know, within the steelworkers. You know, it's our members who are the ones who are suffering through what job loss means, what it means to not know if your plant or your facility is going to be open a year from now and there's no other good job prospect out there in your area. You know, all those types of things, you know, to get people out telling their stories, telling those very real pieces of what happens on the other side of the economy. That's what we need.
We are doing a storytelling campaign, Share Your Care Story, and the young people kicked it off this summer. High school students in San Antonio, Texas, they did a project called the Abuelas Project, where they went out into the community and interviewed their grandmothers about their lives, their stories, and their hopes for care for themselves but for future generations. And we're now sending cameras from campus to campus. Students are telling their stories, talking about who took care of them growing up and what care they are hoping for their grandparents. And I think those stories will really carry the heart of what this is through.
And part of the new world, that's a whole new way of organizing. And part of the world that we were talking about earlier, what you were talking about earlier, is that it's a new world, a new media that gets those voices out, that makes people see them on YouTube, see them in different places, and latch onto them.
Exactly.
And that's what gets people, it moves people to a different place.
And I think what's interesting is some of the most iconic images that have come out this year have been from everyday people and things that they've put on the internet rather than media institutions.
Mm-hmm. So you all are going to leave this conference up and pulling it out.
Absolutely. Yes, absolutely.
It's been great to meet the three of you. I mean, you're inspirations, and it can be one. You can take back the American dream and make it work. So I want to thank the three of you for spending the hour with us here.
Thank you.
Melissa Ryan, New Media Director for New Organizing Institute. Kim Miller, National Rapid Response Coordinator for the United Steelworkers. Still love that title. I, Jen Fu, Director of the National Domestic Workers Alliance. Thank you all so much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And I'm Mark Steiner here with Free Speech TV. And the Mark Steiner Show on WEAA 88.9 FM, the voice of the community. But don't go away, because we're going to come right back with the other conversations from this conference around race, politics, and the future of America. Stay with us. We'll be right back.